Well, fancy seeing you here on this YouTube channel. Can I call myself a YouTuber anymore? I don't know if I'm allowed to. It's been like 3 years since I've made like consistently anything. This is once again the only video on this channel for the entirety of 2023. But here I am, I'm back, and I'm ready to talk about video games. Have you heard of them? They're pretty cool. They're not too bad. It's been a weird year. It's been a busy year. I've been to America twice, to the West Coast, which I'd never been to in my entire life. I went to the Game Awards. We announced a game at the Game Awards. It was a wild time. But I did also have some time to play some video games. So that's what it is I is going to be talking about right now on here. And if you haven't heard me for a year, well, then that's a shame. But you can hear me more often on my video game podcast called This Nintendo Life. Go listen to it, it's fun. And you can hear about me talking about all these games across the year instead of in this one video that I do every 12 months. Anyway, well, let's get into it. It's time for video games. Let's talk about the best ones of 2023. Number 10, Paranormasite: The Seven Mysteries of Honjo. I hate horror. I also love visual novels. So when I started hearing great things about Paranormasite: The Seven Mysteries of Honjo, I was struck with a conundrum. Did I dare push through the jump scares to experience what was, by all accounts, a fantastic visual novel? Well, the fact that I'm talking about it now should tell you that I did have the conviction to face that fear. And boy, am I glad that I did. Set in a 1980s Japan, Paranormasite puts you in the shoes of several characters on one fateful night, where curses become real and murdering others gives you the chance to bring a loved one back to life. It is an altogether thrilling and intriguing mystery that does storytelling in a way only video games can and has some of the coolest moments I've experienced all year. The soundtrack has some truly eerie vibes, which lend to that creeping sense of dread that the game so masterfully instills in you, and the writing is sharp and engaging in equal measure. Going outside my comfort zone with games has often led to some of my favourite new experiences, and Paranormasite is yet more proof to bolster that assertion. Number 9, A Space for the Unbound. I'm a child of Indian descent who speaks with an English accent and grew up in Scotland. I have never been to Indonesia, nor did I grow up there during the 1990s, and yet A Space for the Unbound, a narrative game about love-struck teenagers in that exact time and place, so thoroughly grounded me in that experience that I felt its authenticity bleeding through the screen, despite having no way to verify its legitimacy. There is a sense of cozy and whimsy to this small town and its various denizens. You will learn the neighborhood and the routes through its connected streets to the point where it truly feels like home. Atma and Raya's story is one of trials and tragedy, but equal parts hope and joy. This is a story about telling stories, and the way those tales become a blanket to often dampen the realities we don't want to face. It's a remarkably well-told tale that is brought to life by incredible artistry on all fronts, and will bring a tear to the eye of even the most hardened of souls. Number 8, Pikmin 4. Loop is a word that has become more prevalent in video game discourse in the past few years, and the things that define a strong, repeatable cycle have come to be an important cornerstone of how people become hooked on certain types of games. I would say that the Pikmin series has always had a strong and satisfying loop, but with the fourth entry in the two-decades-old franchise, Nintendo has come close to perfecting it. This is a game that begs you to 100% it, to explore every nook and cranny of the overworld, and to dig up every treasure that lies beneath the ground. The addition of Ochi makes everything so much more seamless and provides a quick and easy way to keep all your little soldiers safe. I loved how broken Ice Pikmin were, and there's a real satisfaction to just slamming your finger on the A button 100 times as you watch a giant bug's life force disappear in an instant. There is so much to do and see in Pikmin 4 that even after 30 hours, I still have things to go back for, but for the time I had with it, I could barely put it down. Hopefully the glowing reception it has received from so many people means good things for the future of one of Nintendo's most underappreciated series. Number 7, Venba. As already mentioned on this list, I am a child of Indian descent, but more importantly, I'm a grandchild of Indian immigrants. Diaspora is a word I only became aware of in the past few years, I think mainly because there are so many more stories and pieces of media being written from the perspective of those with immigrant heritage, and Venba is one of the first mainstream games exploring that very identity. This game follows an Indian family who moved to Canada, and in a brisk hour and a half story explores the experience of what it's like to be the parent of a child who is struggling with having a foot in two identities, as well as being that child and not knowing how to define yourself. There are moments in Venba that hit extremely hard and strike you with the crushing reality of what such an existence can look like. However, it balances these dark narrative moments perfectly with cooking segments that ask you to make traditional South Indian dishes, some of which I have a very strong personal connection to as well. Food is such an important way in which I feel connected to my Indian heritage, and Venba understands that so thoroughly that it honestly bowled me over with its depiction of not only the process of cooking, but what that meal can mean to a family. It is a truly special experience, and I hope we get more like it. Number 6, The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom. As someone who counts Breath of the Wild as their favourite game of all time, it might shock you to see Tears of the Kingdom take such a modest position on this list. Look, I'll be frank, I had an amazing time with Tears of the Kingdom, played 115 hours of it within the space of a month, and count it as having some of the best moments in all of video games. But I can't quite escape that feeling of having done it all before. The sky and the depths provided some freshness to the experience, but the repeated side quests, rewards, and ultimately the landmass made it so that the impact Tears of the Kingdom had on me was far lesser than that of its predecessor. That said, I think that Ultra Hand, lovely reference in Nintendo's own history by the way, is one of the most remarkable tools that's ever been given to a player in a game. Making stupid contraptions that barely work, or strapping a Korok to a rocket and skimming it over the water were some of the best, most dumb things I did in games this year. The flexibility that Ascend and Recall provide made for really fun moments, and the main story and progression saw a vast improvement over Breath of the Wild. There are sequences in this game, like getting the Master Sword and the entire finale, that were truly astonishing. Despite all my misgivings, this is still a tremendous entry in Nintendo's Crown Jewel series. Number 5, Super Mario Bros. Wonder. I've always been on the wrong side of history when it comes to 2D Mario. My favourite is Mario Land 2 on Game Boy, and I'm one of those people who doesn't think Mario 3 is very good, actually. So, when I first saw Mario Wonder, I had hoped that it would be able to break my own Mario curse. And I'm happy to say that not only did it break the curse, it absolutely smashed it to pieces. Wonder is such an apt title, as so much of my time playing this game was spent with a giant smile plastered all over my face. The sheer amount of variety and delightful surprises that this game throws at you cannot be understated. From enemies to level ideas to the eponymous Wonder Flowers, there isn't a moment where this game stands still or rotely trots out just another standard Mario level. I loved how full of life and vibrancy this world is, the fact that Mario is just bursting to the seams with animation flourishes, and how contextual everything is. One of my favourite early moments was finishing a level with Elephant Mario and realising that if you have water in your trunk, you will spray it on the flower guy at the end to bloom his head. Details like this are why Nintendo games speak to me, that extreme level of polish that leads to utter delight. Super Mario Bros. Wonder is not only the best 2D Mario game, it's one of the best entries in the entire series and shares more in common with the 3D outings than any previous side-scrolling entry. If this is a base for the future, then I couldn't be more excited for where they go next. Number 4, Hi-Fi Rush. There is this problem in video games where anything that comes out in January or February becomes extremely forgotten by the end of the year. I get it, we're all humans with stupid dumb brains that can only hold so much stuff, but if there is a game that resonates with me early on in a year, I tell myself to remember that feeling, to bottle it up and not let it go until the end, and that is exactly what I did with Hi-Fi Rush. This game fucking slaps, and it came out of nowhere, from a studio known for horror games of all things. Hi-Fi Rush is probably the best looking game I've ever seen. The sharpness and vibrancy of this world at a high resolution and running at 120 frames per second is just remarkable. It is a cartoon come to life, which is evident from the way in which it seamlessly shifts from 2D animated cutscene to 3D real-time gameplay in an instant, and with a smoothness of soft butter melting into toast. This is at its heart a character action game, but it brought to light something I've never quite got my head around with the genre. That, in truth, all these games are rhythm games. Hi-Fi Rush is just upfront about it. As someone who counts themselves as having pretty good rhythm, I absolutely relish the fights in this game, keeping time with the music and having combos in my head ready to go at a moment's notice. It is so tightly paced, with each level introducing new ideas and the boss fights being absolute standout moments. There is just such a clear and distinctive vision to this game that it's hard not to be awed by what it pulls off. If this is what a studio taking risks looks like, I need everyone to follow in Tango's footsteps. Number 3, Street Fighter 6. I have never been a fighting game guy. Sure, I love Smash Brothers, but as the internet will most likely tell you, that's not really a fighting game. The problem is that these games are so intimidating. They require hours and hours of dedication, just learning basic inputs to even start getting into them. But Street Fighter VI looked fucking cool. I had to play it just for the sheer style and fluidity, and goddamn was that the best gaming decision I made this year. Now I know that one of the great things Street Fighter VI did was introduce a more beginner-friendly control scheme, but I wanted to get the true fighting game experience, and so I picked a character, Cammy, and I just started learning. Quarter circle, Z motion, stringing together moves. I just bashed my head against a wall in training mode and online matches for hours and hours and hours. And slowly but surely, I started to improve, feeling out opponents and how to punish their mistakes, knowing the right time to use a super, having those bread and butter combos to go to when all else failed. It was an absolute joy. Now, compared to most, I haven't put that much time into the game, only 50 hours, but I've managed to go from the bottom of iron up to silver in that time. And though it may not sound like an achievement to many, it was a hell of a jump for me. And so much of it was because I thought Cammy looked cool and I liked fast, agile characters. As Maximilian Dude always says, play who you want in fighting games because cool characters are the gateway to the genre, and that couldn't be more true. I've continued to play Street Fighter VI all year and will keep coming back to it for years to come in my quest to eventually get good. Number 2, Xenoblade Chronicles 3 Future Redeemed. Oh wow, NBZ, what a surprise! A Xenoblade thing on your list? What is it, a random Tuesday on any week of any year? Yes, okay, I am nothing if not predictable, but hear me out. This is the culmination of the entire Xeno canon. No, not just the Xenoblade series, but Gears, Saga, and even X in some adjacent ways. Tetsuya Takahashi finally did it, the completion of a series and in many ways the end of his journey with Perfect Works. Future Redeemed follows a group of characters hundreds if not thousands of years before the events of Xenoblade Chronicles 3, and frankly, talking about it more than that is a spoiler. Because this entire thing is one giant spoiler for the entire Xenoblade franchise. Rex and Shulker here in their older, gruffer forms, as well as a bunch of new characters who are all callbacks or references to the series in some way or another. The combat is as solid as ever, with some refinements from Xenoblade 3, and the world continues the trend of mashing together locations from both the first and second entries. But where this DLC really gets me is that it is truly a love letter to the original Xenoblade. There are these heart-to-heart moments that reference the very beginning of the series in such touching and lovely ways, and really tug on my nostalgia for everything that game did. The music is absolutely fucking outstanding, and Aurora Shelf now ranks as one of the greatest Xenoblade songs of all time, which is an achievement for a series that has some of the best OSTs in the entire medium. The ending is truly mind-blowing and caps off a series that has become my favourite JRPG franchise and one of my favourite gaming series of all time. I cannot wait to see what Monolith Soft cooks up next. Number 1. Cocoon. Perfect as a word is ironically by its very nature flawed. Perfect things don't exist because in reality everything is flawed. The only way something can be perfect is if you look at it from a purely subjective perspective. I consider many movies, books, TV shows, and indeed games perfect despite the fact that they are all inherently flawed. Because for something to be perfect for me, the things that are so incredible about it outweigh the negatives to such degree that they practically cease to exist. All this to say that my number one game for this year is the very definition of a perfect game. Cocoon is the brainchild of Jeppe Carlsson, the former lead designer on critically acclaimed puzzle platformers Limbo and Inside, the latter of which I would also consider a perfect game. But Cocoon for me surpasses even its predecessors. It is one of the most confident, deftly designed, and purposely constrained experiences I have ever had in the medium. There is a pure sheen and polish to every tiny moment, from the way in which your wings lightly buzz when there's an interactable object, to the extreme smoothness of transitioning from one orb to another. There is not one single piece of this game that wasn't considered, debated, and meticulously pored over. At its heart, Cocoon is a puzzle game, but it feels like so much more than that. It creates this weird, ethereal world with a simultaneously calming and haunting atmosphere. It carefully and smartly introduces mechanics at an exacting pace without a single word on the screen, teaching the player purely through gameplay in one of the most seamless ways I have ever seen. Even the movement, which is one of my biggest bugbears in gaming, is tuned to absolute perfection, with the exact speed to make you feel like you can rattle through the world at a clip, but not too fast as to breeze past the stunning, organic architectural design. Nothing overstays its welcome, and it even manages to have boss fights with unique mechanics that are extremely fun to engage with and only show up within those spaces. Cocoon is an absolute triumph on all fronts, and gripped me so thoroughly that I could barely think about anything else while playing it. It is one of the most brilliant things ever made, and unquestionably my game of the year for 2023. And there you have it. That's another year in the books of video games. Now you might be wondering, Emily said, what the fuck? You're a Fire Emblem fan. What are you doing? We're Fire Emblem Engage on your game of the year list. I did spend like 85 hours playing Engage, and I really enjoyed it at the time. And then like I completely forgot I played it, I forgot what any of the characters are called. I realized very clearly that maybe it wasn't as good as I thought it was. So I was like, well, I don't think it can get in here. But I did enjoy it, it was good. So it would have maybe in another year made my list. But yeah, shout out to Fire Emblem Engage. Definitely some good tactics in there, some good ass tactics. Also shout out to some other games that didn't make it. The Murder of Sonic the Hedgehog. It's the best Sonic game that came out this year, and probably the best game since Sonic Mania, made by the social media team at Sega, not by the actual developers. I don't know what that says about the state of Sonic right now, but it's really good. If you like Ace Attorney, check it out. Honkai Star Rail, I put a lot of time into that this year. I actually played a bit of it the other day as well. Really like that game, despite, you know, all the gacha elements and everything. It's just a fun, really nicely animated turn-based RPG. Good time. Final Fantasy 16, I also loved in the moment, but then, like, I don't know, the story of it didn't really sit well with me. The ending, all that good stuff, was not quite as up to par as I wanted it to, but it has some of the most fucking spectacular scenes in all the video games. Some of those, like, moments with bosses are unbelievable, so definitely worth playing for those. I loved Sea of Stars, a really good classic RPG that just in the style of Chrono Trigger, incredible artwork, really fun combat, great music, just didn't quite make it. And the same with Spider-Man 2, which is, it's another really good Spider-Man game, which I enjoy those a good amount. They're good fun, but it wasn't really doing anything crazy, so it didn't quite make the list. And same goes for Like a Dragon Gaiden, The Man Who Erased His Name, which I've always been a fan of the Yakuza games, as many people know. And yeah, that one is great also. So that's going to do us for this video. Thank you so much for watching and for listening, for whatever you do. And I'll be back hopefully next year with some more stuff and probably another video like this. See ya.